My name is Sean Davidson. I'm a pastor here at The Res. A special welcome to those who may be joining with us for the first time or returning after being away for a while. I've met a number of you this morning. It's great to have you here. Coffee is on at the back. Please feel free to grab a cup anytime. Maybe grab some for me too. That would be great. Well, today we're continuing on in the season of Easter with our teaching series. You can see it right up there on the screen. Practicing resurrection. This was a line that I used in my sermon for Easter Day. The question before us is this. What might it mean to practice resurrection here and now together? It's really easy to assume that death is the end, that it has the final word. And a certain kind of life flows from that assumption. What if it were otherwise? What if we really are destined for new life in Christ? How might that change the way that we live right now? This has been a good adventure to be on in these past weeks. I found it stretching in lots of ways and encouraging too. I have to confess though, it's been a struggle preparing for today's sermon. Monday hit really hard. Reminded us all too well of the fragility of life. The whole world knows by now. At around 1:30 p.m. on Monday afternoon, a man in a white rental van jumped the curb at Young and Finch and drove south along the sidewalk, running down multiple pedestrians over a dozen city blocks. 10 people were killed and 14 were injured. I don't know about you, but this was really hard for me to take in at first. There's so much bad news in the media, isn't there? We get it every day in a steady stream, and we can only take in so much. But then something like this hits close to home, just a few kilometers from where we live, right here. And it's impossible to ignore. How could we? The people who were run down, the witnesses at the scene, the police and paramedics, the driver. These are our own, our neighbors in the six. And we're desperate to do something, to reach out and help, and somehow to make sense of it all. And how do we make sense of it all? My gosh, it's all out of proportion. How could someone, anyone, lose control like that? Where's the line between coping well and completely losing it? Life can be hard. We all know that in varying degrees, right? It can be brutally hard for some. But what could ever justify this? 10 lives lost, 14 injured. It boggles the mind. And it wrenches the heart. There's been some good news along the way. Surprising glimmers of light. You've likely heard this quote from Fred Rogers. It's been going around. When I was a boy and I would see scary things in the news, my mother would say to me, "Look for the helpers. You will always find people who are helping." It hasn't been hard to spot the helpers this week. So many people have stepped up to lend a hand, to come alongside, responding with care and sensitivity. Bystanders, first responders, neighbors, counselors, faith leaders, even politicians. And then there's Officer Ken Lamb, who refused to shoot. His restraint was stunning. What do you do when a gun is pointed at you and the other person is begging you to take their life? If you are Ken Lamb, you stand your ground and refuse to give in, risking no one's life but your own. There are signs of grace everywhere. I think we can be grateful for that, and even proud in a way. We live in an amazing city. Still, this is really hard. There's a tear in the fabric now, a crack that runs deep. There's no amount of helping that can reverse that. You've probably heard the saying, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I hate that saying, especially in times like this. I get it. Adversity can be a positive force, right? It can give us resilience and can even give us a renewed appreciation for life. But what about the family and friends of those cut down on Yonge Street? And what about the survivors as they struggle to find their feet and to get their bearings? Let's just pause on that for a moment. Just imagine what these people are going through. There's good reason to celebrate the compassion and resilience that we see going on all around us. It really is amazing, and it does help. But it doesn't change the fact that life is completely different now for family and friends who've lost loved ones, for the survivors who can't go back to the life that they knew. It's different for us too. This is the question that's been nagging me all week. How do you make good on such a senseless act of violence? It really was senseless. There was no goal to achieve, no benefit to gain, no good to protect. Nothing that lends it to some positive end. It was just blind rage and frustration welling up from some dark hidden place. How do any of us make good on that? Now, these are uncomfortable questions. I think partly because they ripple out into other areas of life that we rarely talk about. What about the suffering that completely overwhelms and refuses to be channeled to some better end? Like debilitating pain or terminal illness, or deep-rooted poverty, or trauma that takes a lifetime to unfold. Whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. I went looking for the origin of that saying. It comes from Twilight of the Idols, a book by Friedrich Nietzsche, written in the latter part of the 19th century. What did he mean by it? In his typical rambling and elusive style, Nietzsche wants to affirm a vibrant life in the face of all that would threaten it. We have this tendency to rest secure in our institutions and systems of thought, and this can make us fragile and fearful. Nietzsche despises all of that. Instead, he challenges us to be free from constraint, to trust our instincts for life, and to meet suffering head on rather than shrinking from it. Again, there's some truth to this. When we open up and allow for adversity, we can grow more resilient and have greater capacity for welcoming all that life brings. But this isn't the whole truth. A year after Nietzsche wrote Twilight of the Idols, he suffered a mental breakdown and he fell silent. He spent his remaining years, 10 of them, in seclusion, where he was cared for by his sister Elizabeth. There are forces at work in the world that throw us completely sideways, that bring us down, that paralyze. Absurdly bad things happen to ourselves, to the ones we love, to others we admire and look up to. Stuff that's really hard to explain or to make good on. And we can easily get stuck wondering what it all means. This is part of our experience too. Let's come back to our sermon series title, Practicing Resurrection. What does it mean to practice resurrection in light of all of this? That's the real question, isn't it? I mean, if it was just an exercise that you could build into a stable and predictable routine, well, that would be easy enough. You could take it or leave it. But the gospel confronts us on a completely different level. And it's unsettling because it doesn't shy away from the deep problems we face or try to make them seem better than they really are. What if resurrection is true? And what if it has implications for life here and now? God's future brought into the present, even in the midst of adversity, hardship, and unspeakable tragedy. This is the level that Jesus is speaking at in the gospel. He's not giving us strategies to cope until kingdom come. He confronts the stark reality of evil and death at its most senseless and intractable, and leads us to assume that new life beyond the grave is somehow open to us now, no matter the circumstance we find ourselves in. You can hear it all the way through the Gospel of John. Jesus stands with people from all walks of life, but most especially with those who suffer with little recourse, who are trapped in the most desperate circumstances, people who are homeless, people who struggle with disability and disease, people who've lost loved ones to death, people so far gone that they can barely know what it might mean to have hope. Jesus stands in the midst of that kind of trouble, and he refuses to blink. Everywhere he goes, he brings help. He speaks in a way that gives dignity. He feeds the hungry and the thirsty. He heals the sick, casts out demons, and raises people to new life. Jesus is the consummate helper. But he doesn't only help. Over and over again, he draws people to himself, and he gives assurance that they are safe in his care, secure in some ultimate way, and that they have life in him no matter what they face. Listen to his voice. I am the bread of life. Whoever comes to me will never go hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty. I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life. I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep, and my sheep know me, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live, even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die. And from our gospel passage today, you can open it if you'd like. I am the true vine, true nourishment. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Jesus draws people to himself like this, not to minimize the suffering and hardship they face, to downplay it, to pretend it doesn't really matter, nor to turn a blind eye to evil and injustice. We know that. The point is this. Jesus himself is the only true source of life. And he invites one and all to draw on that life that he provides, right where we'd least expect it, in the God-forsaken places. Think about that. In the God-forsaken places, where all our typical answers and our ways of coping fail us, right there. If you remain in me and I in you. Jesus expands in verse 7 of our gospel reading. If you remain in me and my words remain in you. Notice what he adds there. My words. These words of Jesus, they matter. They're more than just type marks on a page. It's really tempting to think of them like that. They've come down to us from the very beginning, from those who saw with their own eyes and heard with their own ears. They've come down to us here and now in our own troubled times, from Jesus himself, from the risen one. Can we hear him speaking to us? These words, they do more than inform or instruct. They feed us. They give us light. They gather us in. They bring us to life. And they make us thrive and bear good fruit. They do all of this because they come from Jesus. the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end, the living one. How do we practice resurrection when evil stops us dead in our tracks, when our strength fails and we're stunned into silence, when we're tempted to shut down in confusion or despair? This is how. We turn to Jesus wherever we are, and we trust him at his word. Hear his voice again. Do not be afraid. Be sure of this. I am with you always, even to the very end. Look for the helpers. That's what Mr. Rogers' mom said. I think it's pretty good advice. But let's not just look. Let's find ways to join the helpers as we can. As we do, let's keep turning to Jesus and trusting him for everything, come what may. We're not alone, left to cope as best we can with the little we've got. Jesus is here. He is present by the Spirit to comfort, to strengthen, and to guide, inviting us to share in his love and to extend it to others. Let's eagerly welcome the life he's promised and follow him at his lead. Amen.